Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
Good morning. It's 7:14 at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. This is Galesburg Live. I'm Will Stevenson. Thanks for joining me this morning. It's a short month, even though it's a leap year. Today is, of course, February 29th. But as luck would have it, there were five Saturdays in the month of February. So since I'm only here every fourth Saturday, well, here I am again twice this month. But that's all right. Very glad to be with you. And I think over the next couple of hours, we're going to have a couple of interesting conversations, as we always do during this time period. And, of course, if you like what you hear this morning, we have a lot of these same conversations on my day job, if you will, Galesburg's Evening News, weeknights at 5 o'clock. In our second hour this morning, about an hour from now at 8:15, we will talk with my friend Scott Rasso. He is he's been a teacher in the Galesburg School District. He's now in the administrative office. We'll talk about his move into that. And we'll also talk about a couple of other things he's involved in. I know him from a local theater. He's directing, again, if I may be so shameless, the Who's Tommy, which is concluding its two-weekend run this weekend at Prairie Players. I'm helping with that play. We'll talk with him about directing for the first time and all the plays he's acted in. And he has a long history with dance, teaching, and doing it, really. So we'll talk about all that and more coming up in our next hour. But first, a topic I'm not sure that we've ever really covered on this program, at least to the degree that I hope we will do so this morning, genealogy. I know that's that continues to be a very interesting field, and I know a lot of people that spend a lot of time looking into their family history and their ancestry and things like that with, of course, the genealogical societies in the area, and I know that the Galesburg Public Library gets used pretty well for genealogy projects and other things like that. And remember last year they had a genealogy lock-in as well to help folks learn about that. But there's a local man who has a website that has all kinds of tips on it regarding genealogy, and a lot of those tips have been compiled into a new book that we're going to talk about this morning. Michael Neal lives in Rio, and he is responsible for the book and the website, Genealogy Tip of the Day, and he is in our studio this morning. Good morning. Welcome.
Morning. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Very glad to have you, and glad that we have somebody local. We've talked to a number of local authors on this program over the years, and we're glad to have you in that realm as well. It must be pretty exciting to have a book come out.
It was pretty exciting. The once I got it finished, it was kind of, trying to think of the right word, it was kind of a letdown. Getting everything put together was a lot of work, and then you finish it and you're done and there's no excitement because you're done. But
yeah,
it was good from the sense of finishing it up, because it was self-published on Amazon,
right?
And
right,
that's different from just sending a manuscript to a publisher and saying, figure out the details of it. So
yeah, we've talked to a number of people who've self-published books. So what made you decide to go that route versus a more formal setting?
I think it was just to give me more control over the content and what was in the book. I didn't have an editor or a whomever saying, you know, don't write this that way. We're not going to put that in there. We don't like that. We're going to add this or what have you. That was the main reason for doing that, you know, just to have control.
Exactly. Are there a lot of books on the subject of genealogy? That doesn't strike me as something that that comes up a lot, as much as popular and as well used of an area that it is.
There are quite a few how-to books that are, you know, aimed at the beginners or the intermediate individuals, and the tips are different from a how-to book. It's very short, little blurbs, and that's kind of the intent when I started writing them several years ago, was it was something you could read in less than 5 minutes, each individual one, and then move on. It wasn't meant to be a long, you know, 2,000-word essay on something.
So what you're telling me is that you wanted to try to put together something both through this website and through this book that's maybe a little simpler for people.
Right, from two standpoints. One, so it didn't overwhelm somebody who was new And some of the things that we talk about, people that have done work for a while are aware of, but think it was just something to kind of quickly remind them of something that they maybe had forgotten about or what have you, or give them something to go look and try to find more about and read in more depth.
All right. I think I'm going to take a very quick break at that point, and we'll dive more deeply into the field of genealogy and your tips and the book when we come back. Michael Neal is author and webmaster, I guess you could say, of genealogy tip of the day. We'll take a break and we'll get more into it when we come back. It is almost 7:20 as Galesburg Live continues this morning on WGIL. Good morning.
93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL.
/7:22 at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. Galesburg Live continues on this Saturday morning. I'm Will Stevenson. In less than an hour, we'll talk with Scott Rasso about theater and education and dancing. Not necessarily three subjects that go together, I think, but we'll make it all work out next hour, just like we're going to make a discussion of genealogy work out this morning. In this hour, Michael Neal is my guest, author of Genealogy Tip of the Day and a website under the same name, genealogytipoftheday.com, which, by the way, we will link to when we post this conversation once our program ends this morning at WGIL.com. Michael, again, thank you for coming in this morning. You started in this more than 30 years ago, correct?
That's correct. I was 12 or 13 years of age when I got remotely interested, shall we say. And
what was that interest early?
My brother had to do one of those trees kids have to do. And I just got a little more interested and wanted to find out more. And at the time, three of my grandparents were living. My great grandmother was living. So I had, and that's the source we traditionally use, our living relatives as your first source. So I had a lot of those. And some of the records that a person would start with were close to where I lived. So I had access to some of that information, and I was just curious, or nosy may be a more accurate word, and it just kind of went from there.
And like with all good things and areas of interest, a curiosity is really how it starts in this case, isn't it?
Yes.
What made you then want to seriously dive in and look into your family's history in that way?
I think a lot of it is just it's a puzzle a person's trying to figure out. And you would, sometimes I'd read things about earlier families, you know, 200 or so years ago. And I think some of the conclusions people have reached don't quite make sense. This doesn't seem right. And I wanted to, if possible, try to find out, you know, what the real relationships were, a little bit more about their lives and how they lived. And you find out that people's lives in some ways were different, but in other certain details of how people live, people really haven't changed all that much.
You said there were parts that didn't seem right. How do you come to that conclusion, especially when you're starting out?
Well, in some ways, those are kind of, when you start to read, they're kind of obvious. People who are having children past the age of 70, particularly females, and you know, certain things that are really totally egregiously incorrect. And sometimes when books are compiled, people overlook those details. They don't realize there's those mistakes in there. And when I got to looking, I noticed, and I kind of wanted to find out what really happened. Or, you know, the other thing too, for some people, instead of just finding out, you know, when they were born, when they died, when they got married, find out about, you know, as much as possible, what their life was like, you know, their educational levels, where they moved, where they lived. Did they have money? Did they not have money? You know, and things of that type. And there are records you can find out. For example, when a person dies, if they have money, and that's the problem for some of us, if your way back relatives didn't have any money, they just tend to leave fewer records because that's just the way it is.
Sure.
But, you know, when they would go through and list the items in their estate when they died, it would list every item. Today they would just call it miscellaneous household items and dump it in. But there, it would list, you know, their eyeglasses, the chamber pot, the mirror, the linens, everything by and some of those details are interesting to find out, you know, what those items were and how they used them and things of that type.
When did you go? I imagine, did it start out with just asking parents, grandparents, and that type of thing about history? And at what point did you kind of shift to kind of doing more serious research?
I would say after about probably 6 months or a year, I realized I had to get beyond what people remembered. I mean, a person wants to get those stories and the things that your living relatives remember, but you get beyond a certain point and there are no memory of some of those things. Or the flip side of that is there are certain things that people will not tell you for one reason or another. I can remember I asked my grandmother about her grandfather's siblings, and there was one, she knew a lot about all of them, except for one. Mm-hmm. And she seemingly knew nothing, just nothing about him, was rather dismissive when I asked about him. And that kind of piqued my curiosity because I knew
when she was hiding something. She just didn't know.
She was hiding something.
Okay.
She was hiding something. And I could kind of tell by her reaction. And it turns out he had some mental issues of some sort and had committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And
his
daughters have found him. You know, so it was, and I understood, you understand why people don't like to talk about those things.
Yeah.
You know, you can see that. But her reaction told me there was something going on there.
So in other words, you were kind, you might have been a good news reporter, Michael. You sense that somebody's not giving you a straight answer on something and you need to probe further and further and
sometimes
get more details.
Right, because sometimes you have to do that because you can get a feel for when somebody's, you know, if they are open about several things and all of a sudden they're not, or you just kind of get a feel for there's something else there, you know.
I'm going to need to take a break here in about 2 minutes or so. But before I do that, let's kind of talk about starting. If there's somebody out there that has been kind of interested in their family history, but really doesn't know where to start in terms of looking it up or wants to go beyond just asking family members and things like that, what's the first thing they should do or should be thinking about?
One thing, before you even get to looking at records, if there are family photographs that have not been identified, that's probably the one thing you want to make sure, because the records in the courthouse and libraries and archives hopefully will be there in so many years.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that we suggest to people is the human mind is the most fragile resource there is.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's pictures you don't have identified, that's what you want to start with first.
And the older the pictures are, I'm sure, the harder those will become to identify.
It can be very difficult. And sometimes all you may know is that it's a certain family, or you may know who one person is or roughly where it's taken. But that's where I would make sure you've done that as much as you can first. And then you can go on the Family Search website. That's the website of the LDS Church. All of what's on there is free.
Okay.
And I would suggest that people start, you know, they're going to take the census here in a month or whatever it is. We've done that since 1790. You can start looking for, you know, 1940 is the most recent one that's released to the public. And for most people, that would probably include grandparents or great-grandparents. And that's kind of a way to start, is trying to find them in that and then work your way back every 10 years.
Do you run into situations like when you're trying to identify family photos that kind of what you were saying before when you were, you know, asking questions of grandparents or whatever, that there's this clear photographical evidence of something in the family, but that they still just don't want to talk about it? I mean, if it were me, I would probably try to get rid of the photos at some point if I knew they existed.
You know, it's not. I do know people have cut pictures. I've seen them. They'll take a pen and just mark out that person's face. Kind of like the 1930 equivalent of cropping somebody out of a picture.
Right.
You know, or they've taken a scissors and cut somebody out. Although sometimes that was done to put the picture in a locket. But you'll see they've taken a marker or ink and just inked that person out. Like that's, you know, gonna get rid of them. But
have you had that happen?
I have. I personally haven't had. Don't have any pictures like that. I've.
You know couple, of people that have.
I know of people that have. I've got a few where I'm surprised they didn't. But that's another. But. You know,
that might be for the Maury Povich show or something like that.
Yeah, that's, you know, but there are people that will sometimes, even when you find documents an evidence of a certain thing happening still really don't want to admit it. And sometimes you just have to realize they're never going to admit that, and you just have to move on. It just kind of depends on the situation sometimes,
too. All right. We'll take another break right there, and we'll continue diving into genealogy when we come back. Michael Neal is a new author and is manager of the website genealogytipoftheday.com. We'll talk more about it, maybe provide some more tips for you, and maybe find out some more about what Michael has found over the years, too, when we come back. But first, Cameron Line has WGIL News headlines. It is 7:31, and you're listening to Galesburg Live on 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
Good morning again. It is 7:36 at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. Our first hour of Galesburg Live continues this morning. I'm Will Stevenson. Galesburg's Evening News is my show weeknights at 5 o'clock, although I'll be off next week, so it'll be somebody else's show next week. But Cameron Line will be filling in for me, and I know, as always, he will do a fine job. We're just talking off the air. Our guest here is an instructor at Carl Sandburg College. On Monday night, Cameron will be talking to someone who will be doing a musical performance at Carl Sandburg College in the coming days. So listen in for that Monday night at 5:40. Our second hour this morning, by the way, at 8:15, Scott Rasso will join me to talk about various things. Now the connection to Carl Sandburg College. Michael Neal is, in his day job, an instructor at Carl Sandburg College, but in addition to that, he is interested in genealogy and has published a how-to book on the subject and a website that it stemmed from. Genealogytipoftheday.com is the website, and Genealogy Tip of the Day is the name of the book again. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you, Michael, for having me.
What do you teach at Sandburg?
I teach math. That's
Goodness. Yeah. That's I joke that because I'm a broadcaster, I really only need to tell time two different ways, and that's really all the math I need to know. But, gosh, is Common Core math in the grade school level ruined it for everybody?
Well, that's a whole other topic altogether. That's a whole, yeah.
I'm just going to take that as a solid yes at this point, but another discussion for another day. I'm not sure that I could go a whole hour about talking about math without going insane, definitely one of the most important subjects outside of the specific major taught at Sandburg, for sure. So how long have you been out there, by the way?
Almost 30 years.
Wow. So you've been doing that as long as you've been interested in genealogy, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah.
We talked before the break about some of the how you got started and some of the things you've found over the years. Have you come across anything in all your research that has surprised you maybe more than you might have expected you would be?
Trying to think of scandals I could mention and not be in trouble later.
Right.
It's the first. I guess one thing is that people aren't as different today as they used to be. People don't realize that. Some things have changed, but other things have not.
As diverse
have and not,
of a people as we are, that's...
It's, you know, I guess the one, I've got a female relative that I always thought was kind of interesting in a couple different ways. She and her husband were German immigrants, and they married in Cincinnati, came to Illinois as a young married couple, lived in a little river town on the Mississippi, and he accidentally shot himself.
Oh my goodness.
And he wasn't really, I'm not really sure what was going on, but this was, livestock used to roam free. This cow had been getting into his yard for some time, and this is 1850-ish, and he'd gotten tired of the cow running into his yard. And so he got his shotgun all packed down. He was going to shoot the cow. And this is where I think he was slightly intoxicated, because he grabbed the barrel of the gun to hit the cow with, and he hit the cow.
No.
And as the newspaper said, no. It fired and he expired. And
my gosh.
And she was left with, to put herself in her shoes, her English at the time was probably not that great. She had two little children, and she marries the first schmo that comes along who's not married. Well, that doesn't go well. That lasted maybe 3 months.
Sure.
And then she marries a guy. They have children. They get divorced. They get married again. And then we've moved to about 1870-ish here. And then on the second marriage, they get divorced again. And the husband is filing suit this time. And the judge is confused because there's the testimony. And the judge doesn't understand they've been married and divorced before.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked, he says, let me get this straight. You were married to her before. Yes, I was married to her before, sir. And then he says, she promised this time she would stay. Well, she didn't. But, you know, she just had kind of, she didn't have option. You know, she was unmarried. She was single with two little kids, didn't have a job, didn't speak English. She didn't have a lot of options at that point. It's 1850. Right. She didn't have options, you know, except to get married three times and have all of them end in some kind of whatever. So she was quite an interesting character.
I think that probably speaks to an important point here, that the more something like that happens in a family history, the more it branches out like that, I guess, that the more complicated the research can become, I would imagine.
In some cases, and women can be challenging in that era when women's property rights were different, and you know, women couldn't own property, couldn't sell property, couldn't bequeath property, and that's a whole nother throws a whole nother challenge onto things. Is researching through that, for that time period when women could not own property. There, mm-hmm. I've got a guy who he died before his wife, and he in his will he says, I give her my property, but if she remarries, it goes to my children when she gets remarried.
Hmm.
And on the surface, that sounds like, well, you're being a real runner. But
yeah.
At that point in time, legally, if she got the property in her name and she married again, hubby number two could do whatever he wanted to with it.
Hmm.
He could have taken it and been gone, and so then the widow wouldn't have had anything, nor would the children. So it sounds bad on the surface, but at the time, like a lot of things, it was the legal workaround. So the husband, the first husband who had the property, as best he could, he was really protecting her, because if he gave it to her outright and she married the hired man could just run off and do whatever he wanted with it, and she'd be left with nothing.
Even though it doesn't seem on the surface like a well-intentioned thing.
Right. It was... Given the legal structure of the time, it was the best workaround. It's kind of like today. People do things for legal reasons.
Yeah.
You work around the system. That's what that guy was doing. He was working as best he could around the system.
So it's more complicated as the legal system and as things like that have become over the years. Can that make doing the research more difficult too?
In some ways, because laws have changed over time, sometimes what can happen is people assume what works today and the way things are today is the way it worked in 1830 or 1750, right. And it was a whole different ball game. I had a relative in New England in 1830-ish. It was called warning out,
mm-hmm.
and they moved from one little town to another, and they weren't officially residents of the new town, and so they got the village warned them out, which essentially said, we're telling you, if you're destitute, you have to leave.
Hmm.
Because the town where you're from, if you're destitute, they need to be responsible for you instead of us.
Oh, wow.
And when I first encountered that warning out, I wasn't aware that's what it was. But it was just saying, if you're destitute, we want you to go back to your old village where they can take care. You can go on their pauper rolls and not on our pauper rolls is what it amounted to.
So in other words, as much as you learn about the history of your family, it's really kind of more of a history of the country.
It really is. And we sometimes call it micro history more than anything else. And I've got another guy. This was in Maryland during the American Revolution. And he had lived, I didn't know before this, but there were still manors in Maryland before the Revolution. The lord of the manor owns tens of thousands of acres, And the farmers would have what's called a lifetime. You'd have a lifetime lease. You could lease it for your entire lifetime. And so during the Revolution, the Maryland Colonial Assembly, as governments do, needed money. And so they decided to confiscate the lord of the manor's property and sell it. And the problem was these farmers had lifetime leases.
Yeah.
And when it got sold, they were going to lose their property. And they petitioned the governor, don't sell this because we've lived here forever, what have you. And it didn't matter. It all got sold.
Mm-hmm.
And so the farmers in this instance were very frustrated because they say, we supported the revolution and we were all in favor of all this. And then you're telling us you're going to sell this, our land out from under us. And fortunately, in that case, what happened, even though the governor went ahead and let the sale through, a very well-heeled supporter of the revolution bought the property, and then he sold it to most of the farmers on contract or on some kind of agreement. But they came very close to losing all their property during the revolution because of that, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that
and
is.
And the thing is, it's like a lot of those things. 200 years later, it's interesting. It was not really – it was interesting to the people involved on an entirely different level.
You're right.
Yeah.
Do you find that that people, when they get into this, are they afraid of what they might find out? And I'm even thinking back to when you said that there were, you know, that you had relatives that didn't necessarily want to talk about some of their history. I ask that because I imagine you almost have to not be afraid of what you will find out as you go through and get deep into the research.
The one thing I tell people is if finding out negative things is going to impact you negatively, take up quilting or a different hobby. you're gonna find things out, maybe not heinous crime, but you're gonna find out things that are not favorable.
Yeah,
shall we say? Most people once they get into it, kind of realize that it's more other family members who are not as interested that maybe don't want you to find things out or aren't happy that you're looking into that kind of thing. And sometimes that can inadvertently happen when a person takes one of these DNA tests.
I want to ask about that. Go ahead and finish your answer first.
Because with the DNA, test, what can inadvertently happen, you know, a person hopefully knows if they have surprise children out there that could pop up on a DNA test. But if you take one, you could find that an uncle or an aunt or a first cousin had a child you didn't know about.
Hmm.
And it could be that uncle or aunt thought no one would ever find out. And they didn't, you know, the uncle or aunt didn't test, but because you tested and because you've got a second cousin you didn't know about, and when you try to communicate with those people, and if you're lucky enough to communicate with them, you may find out and figure out, well, you know, Uncle Herman before the war had a couple relationships and there were a couple descendants that came from that. And sometimes those things don't go over too well,
either. On the whole, then, does going to an Ancestry.com or doing a 23andMe DNA test type thing, are those beneficial or hurtful?
I think it's like any other information. It can kind of cut both ways.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's beneficial. The problem sometimes is there can be a secret somebody thought they were going to keep forever or take to their grave, and there may be no paper trail of it, but the DNA, as we say, doesn't lie, and it's still sitting there, so to speak. You know, the problem can be sometimes with people's reactions to things.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lady who went on a research trip with me, and she mentioned she took a DNA test, and she mentioned she found I think it was her grandfather must have had a relationship before grandma.
Wow.
And so she had I forget the exact relationship, but she had this new relatively close relative. And I asked her when she got done talking about it, I said, so how did all this go over? And she said, surprisingly well, there weren't really any, you know, it kind of depends on the family. Some families are a little more laid back about that, and others are not so. You know, I had a
shortly after I had my DNA done, I had a lady contact me that was a match. And the real short version of this is she said, I'm really confused about my matches. And when you take this test, you get matches and projected relationships to people. And mm-hmm. she said, I'm from Chicago. I grew up in Chicago. All my relatives are from Chicago. And she said, I did this test and I've got all the, because I'm from downstate Illinois. And she said, I've got a bunch of these people from like Quincy and all this Illinois, way downstate, you know, she called like, you know, wherever. But, and I, she said, I don't understand them. And she said, can you look in? So I looked at our matches and I said, well, I'm not, because that's the thing about a DNA test. When it gets so far back, you can't be totally precise about the relationship just from the test. You've mm-hmm. got to look at the paper records and the trail. And I said, I'm not really sure, but I said, looking at who we share, I said, I don't know who your grandpa was, but he comes from my aunt so-and-so and uncle. One of their kids or grandsons is your grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
And later she figured out who it was, but it turned out the man that she thought was her grandfather was not her grandfather.
Oh, goodness.
He was this, there had been a short marriage, very short marriage, and then she married the man that the woman thought was her grandfather, the grandmother did. And I don't know how that went over. You know, when I took my test, because people said, did you have any surprises? And I said, all my cousins, when I took it, everybody, all the first and second and third cousins, I knew who they, once we communicated, they were not surprises to me. They were people I knew of.
Mm-hmm.
But that can easily happen. And anybody could have one day look at their test results and poof, see a surprise name they can't figure out.
So again, the lesson is you have to be prepared for whatever comes out of these.
You have to be prepared. And I tell people, if it's really going to bother you and you really don't want to know, then you probably shouldn't take the test. If it's, you know, it's kind of one of those things, because it could happen.
Michael Neal is the author of Genealogy Tip of the Day, which is a book that has stemmed out of a website he maintains. We have one final break we need to take, and when we come back, we'll try to give you some more tips before we leave this hour on what you can do in order to research your family's history. It's 7:53. Galesburg Live continues next on 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. Good morning.
Prepare to save more, spend less, and avoid getting ripped off. Listen to Clark Howard weekday mornings at 9 on 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL.
It's almost 7:57 at WGIL. We are almost flat out of time for this first hour of Galesburg Live, but a lot of great discussion this morning. I'm Will Stevenson with Michael Neal of RIO. He is the author of Genealogy Tip of the Day and also genealogytipoftheday.com. Michael, one of the things you've done in terms of family research, at least for you and for other people, is that you've led trips to what's called the Family History Library in Salt Lake City. Talk a little bit about that.
The Family History Library is the library of the LDS Church, and for religious reasons, they collect inordinate amounts of genealogical data. They've got actual books, microfilm copies of records from across the United States and across the globe.
Are they the only religion that does that?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, and for religious reasons that we won't go into, I'm not a member of the church, we
sure.
won't go into why they do that, but it's a tremendous amount of data, and anyone can go there and use it, and mm-hmm. they do not try to convert you when you go to the library. I've been there numerous times. They have never said boo about that when I've been in the library, and it's free for everyone to use. And I take a, you know, and you can use all their microfilm, all their digital images when you're there. There's no restrictions to using them. And so I take a group there for a week, and we spend a week. Individuals that come, I give them suggestions about where to go next and what to look for, and then we evaluate what they find and say, here's what you should do next, and things like that. But it's kind of it's a low-key group. Everybody arrives on their own. We meet together. There's some pre-trip planning I have people do. They send me problems beforehand so I can say, when we get there, start with this, 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 and that. And we kind of treat it like homework. I give them homework, go look for this. When you find it, bring it back, and we'll give you more homework and look again. Because sometimes people just need, when they go there, they want a little bit of guidance. The collection, the facility can be overwhelming.
Oh, sure.
It's
microfilm for like 40 feet in these huge cabinets.
Yeah.
And that stuff's so heavy, they had to reinforce. The building is reinforced because microfilm floor to ceiling in those cabinets is tremendously heavy.
Oh, sure.
And so it's all reinforced so that it can handle that weight. But we're there for a week, and we have a really good time, and people find stuff most of the time. There's no guarantee you're going to find something, but we make a pretty good effort to help people do that.
All right. Before I wrap up here, give us a couple of tips of other things that people can do, at least as sort of a jumping off point if they want to go down the road of genealogy.
When a person's first getting started and finding things, it can be real exciting to find something and make a discovery. I understand that. The one thing you want to do is keep track of where you found it so that later especially if you get more interested and want to know more about that detail or how accurate it was, where you found it, you'll be glad you kept track of where you found it later.
So you need to take really good notes.
Reasonably good notes. And with digital cameras and imaging, you can just take a picture with your phone, which you couldn't do umpteen years ago.
Right.
And that can really facilitate the keeping track of where you found it. I just tell people, if it's in a book, just take a picture of the cover and the title page and the site information, and that way you've got that information later.
All right. All right. Tell me again about Genealogy Tip of the Day, how folks can find the book and your website and that sort of thing.
You can simply go to genealogytipoftheday.com. There's a link to the book on the website. Or if you go to Amazon.com, it's sold through Amazon as well. You can just go to, in the search box at Amazon, type in Genealogy Tip of the Day, and it should be one of the first book that comes up with the blue cover and the dead people on the front.
How long has the book been out so far?
It was released in early December.
Great. Got interest already, I assume?
So far, a little bit. Yeah.
Wonderful.
It's been pretty good.
So, again, go to genealogytipoftheday.com, and we can try to get some more interest in your book for sure. All right. Michael Neal of Ryo, Genealogy Tip of the Day, and genealogytipoftheday.com. We could probably do the rest of the program this morning on this, but this is a great starting off point. Thank you so much for coming in. This is fascinating.
Thank you for having me.